This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 267, where AC and I are going to talk about the future of app development with Azure AD and cover some news. Recorded live August 16th, 2018. Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes and with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focusing on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make it happen. With a Nintex platform, workflows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No-code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/try-NWC. AC, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you doing?
A little late this morning. Apologies for that. Turns out we haven't spoken to each other for quite a while until, you know, just last week. And so my normal weekly ritual of recording didn't seem to pop into my brain this morning. And I was thinking about how to convert a .NET 4.5.2 app into a .NET standard compliant app, or set of libraries, I should say, and just completely forgot that we were recording. So thanks for the reminder.
No worries, man. It's kind of funny because what did we do? We did three weeks, almost 4 weeks, where we were out of sorts on all of our normal scheduling, and we're about to hit that again for another 2 weeks. Things are going to be a little different.
Yeah, actually, you're going to be in town over my neck of the woods next week and for a conference, SP Fest, and be nice to see you in town.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be fun to be there. So we have SP Fest, or SharePoint Fest Seattle, is next week, or the week that this episode comes out. If you are listening to this the day it comes out, or maybe a day after, make sure you check us out on Facebook, because we will be doing some live shows. Hopefully we'll be streaming them straight to Facebook Live from the conference. We got two shows, one on Wednesday and one on Thursday. Actually, you know what? I actually have the schedule for that. Let me pull it up so our listeners can follow that. The first one is at 10:50, it looks like, 10:50 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. And the second one, it is at 3:50 Pacific time on Thursday.
Cool.
3:50 p.m. Pacific time. Sorry, all of a sudden I touched on calendar and it tried to move it to another time. And anyway.
We'll send out an email to our email list with those details in it as well. So for those of you who are able to tune in, then definitely do so. And love to see you on the stream.
Absolutely. And for those of you who are there, just keep in mind, CJ and I have placed another order for t-shirts for SP Fest and for Ignite. And my poor mailbox place, which is just a UPS store, is about to get inundated with a boatload of boxes today and tomorrow. T-shirts.
Based on the package descriptions from UPS of what's coming, in terms of number of boxes and things, I'm concerned that I fat fingered the order and added an order of magnitude to the t-shirts, because I think, yeah, there's quite a lot coming.
Yeah. What is it? There are a total of seven tracking numbers we got for UPS.
Seven tracking numbers, and each one has multiple boxes in it.
That's what I think. Yeah, each one's got multiple boxes in it. So I'm wondering if I have to go rent a trailer to go pick all these things up. This is...
hence my concern that I fat fingered the order, but we'll see.
The order's okay. It's the invoice that we get. That's the part that I'm a little more concerned about.
Yeah, if the invoice is an order of magnitude larger than we thought it was going to be, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
And related news, we are looking for an additional sponsors.
Exactly. So the long and the short of that is we will have t-shirts to give out.
Yeah, both at SP Fest and at Ignite. And we may have a whole hell of a lot more than we thought we were going to be giving out. So we'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully there's a number that we're expecting.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, you have something to look forward to when you come to Seattle. Currently, our air quality is apparently third worst in the world right now.
What?
Yep. If I turn my webcam, you can only see about a mile.
What's going on?
All the fires. the summer forest fires. And so smoke has descended on Seattle, and apparently we are worse than Shanghai and Mumbai right now.
That's not a good reputation to have right now.
So yeah, apparently it's pretty bad. So much so that my kids' summer soccer camp has been canceled for the last 3 days because they don't want anybody outside.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But wow, that is hopefully it'll blow through by the time you show up.
Yeah, I hope so.
Anywho.
Like, able to breathe. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, so today...
That happened last year too, didn't it, for SP Fest? I thought there was an air quality thing going on then as well.
Yep. It was fires. It was fires again. It's if the wind goes a certain direction, then all the smoke... Last year, the smoke was all coming from British Columbia up in Canada. Mm. This year, I think it's coming from the east side of Washington State.
Mm. Gotcha.
Something like that. Anywho, it's pretty nasty.
Fun stuff.
Anyway, on to bigger and brighter things. We've got some cloud news to cover that we're going to get stuck into next. And then we want to talk about the future of app development with Azure Active Directory and what's going on with app registration and app identities and scopes and permissions and what it's like being a dev with that stuff now. And really, that's kind of a bit of commentary from you and I about the state of the nation more than anything, and also some developments that are coming in that space. But before we get into the news, how about we break for one of our messages from our great sponsors? Raygun provides full-stack error, crash, and performance monitoring for tech teams. Whether you're a software engineer looking to diagnose and resolve issues with greater speed and accuracy, a product manager drowning in bug reports, or you're just concerned you're losing customers to poor quality online experiences, Raygun can provide you with the answers. Get full-stack error and performance monitoring in one place. The next time you're struggling to replicate errors and performance issues in your codebase, think Raygun. Head over to raygun.com, get up and running within minutes, and dramatically improve the online experiences of your users. Okay, AC, we got some news and announcements. We'll try and get through these reasonably quick so we could talk about app registration. But is there anything in particular you wanted to kick us off with? Something big and exciting and fun?
Yeah, I got a fun one. The machine learning blog from Microsoft is announcing a Microsoft AI Idea Challenge. They're looking for breakthrough ideas. And so they are saying they have this challenge they've created. They got a bunch of free things or a bunch of prizes they're going to give away for them. They are, quote, seeking breakthrough AI solutions from developers, data scientists, professional students, and preferably that are depending upon the Microsoft AI platform and services. Gives you a platform to freely share AI models and applications so they are reusable and easily accessible. Some of the prizes include, if you go ahead and enter into it, you can get a Surface Book 2, a DJI Mavic Pro drone, or an Xbox One X.
Very nice.
Yeah, so cool.
So if you've got a cool idea, go build it, submit it.
Yep, they've got the rules all set up in terms of like how long they're accepting applications through or submissions through October the 12th of 2018. And we'll have a link to it in the show notes where you can go learn more about it.
Nice. I got one here. We've covered a couple of Magic Quadrants recently. A new one has come out from Gartner about cloud infrastructure as a service. All the goodies with VMs and storage and all that sort of stuff. And Microsoft and AWS are in the leaders. Google has just snuck into the leaders quadrant. We'll link to this off in the show notes where you can read all about it and all that sort of stuff. But in general, I think Microsoft have said this is for the fifth consecutive year, Gartner has positioned Microsoft as a leader in the Magic Quadrant for Cloud Infrastructure as a Service. Some of you will be saying, ooh, whoop-de-doo. But like we've said on the show before, this stuff matters to some people. And I just love reading the commentary about who's doing what in these things. It's a nice wrap-up of everything going on. But Microsoft is not too far behind AWS in this case. They're slightly to the left, very slightly, and that axis is about the completeness of vision. So for all intents and purposes, AWS and Microsoft are kind of neck and neck in that regard. Where AWS pips Microsoft is in the ability to execute. So they're a wee bit higher on that axis in the leaders quadrant. But apart from those two, I mean, Google is in the leaders quadrant in the very bottom left. So it's kind of about... It's only just over the line and from the lower half of the quadrant. But maybe I'd like to look at previous quadrants and see how they've been making progress and see if they've been sort of sneaking up towards AWS and Microsoft I suspect they have. It was just really interesting to see that Google are sort of so far behind on IaaS, and I guess that's because they've put so much effort into their Kubernetes offering and all that sort of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll link to that in the show notes. You get the free report from Microsoft, the reprint. They've paid for reprint rights, and you just have to go register, and you can go take a look at that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
I got a handful of quick little rapid fire Azure bits of news here. So I guess this isn't a news. This is more of a follow-up thing. The first one is, remember that in the last episode last week in 266, I talked about a reference solution for Cosmos DB about visualizing real-time data using the change feed in Cosmos DB that worked with Stream Analytics and Power BI and all that stuff?
Yeah.
There are three interns who built this reference implementation for Microsoft. And since we mentioned it in the last show, they recorded a video showing off, you know, introducing themselves and also showing off the solution. So you don't have to go through and build it to see what it actually does. They built it and they show a video of the whole thing. So if it's something you want to dive into and take a look at it, then you can check out this video on YouTube that they've posted, which is pretty cool.
Super nice.
But there are two bits of general availability announcements that came out in the past week related to Azure. So I thought I would throw those out there. The first one is about Azure SQL database reserve capacity is now available. So you can now purchase reserve capacity if you know you're going to be using SQL, Azure SQL Server or Azure SQL databases for a long period of time. You can purchase reserve capacity, which basically is telling Microsoft that, hey, we plan on using this for a good amount of time. We are paying for it, you know, on a monthly basis, but we don't plan on shutting this off anytime soon. So can we get a discount for buying a bunch of it up front and say, like, we'll pay it monthly over the course of a year, over the course of 2 years? Yeah. And apparently there are some up to 33% savings if you plan on doing that. So that's one thing that's been announced. And another one is Linux on the Azure App Service environment is also now generally available. So it allows you to now use, say, bring your own custom Docker container that you can bring from, say, Docker Hub or the Azure Container Registry or your own private registry, and you can host these inside of the Azure App Service on Linux instead of just being on Windows as it was in the past. Only real change here from the preview is that all the same stuff still worked. The preview was just really it was a production service. It was just in preview mode. It wasn't in GA.
Yeah, gotcha.
The GA mark, all it does is it just says effective at the end of July of this year. They just pulled the 50% discount that was available if you chose to try this out under the preview. So that's just no longer available. And this is available in over 20 regions and countries now.
Gotcha. For those of you who are listening that use ADFS in your organizations, there is an extremely important security vulnerability that's been patched by Microsoft as of the 14th of August. This was published. It's entitled ADFS Security Feature Bypass Vulnerability. In a nutshell, this guy, I think at Okta, discovered this. And my understanding of it, and I could have this wrong, is that if you use multi-factor auth, that you could, if you knew the username and password of another user in your organization, you could log in as them. So you could use their username and password, but your multi-factor auth, like token generator or whatever, and get in. That's my understanding of this. So the way Microsoft describes it in this vulnerability report is an attacker could send a specifically crafted authentication request, and somebody who successfully exploited this vulnerability could bypass some, but not all of the authentication factors. In other words, so like you could get past MFA, but you'd still need a username and password. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. That's. I mean, it's an edge case kind of a thing because, I mean, you got to know somebody's username and password, but
yeah,
that's scary.
Kind of freaky. Yeah. So if you had a token that was generating codes from somebody else in the org and that person lost their token and you got it, you could sort of brute force somebody's username and password perhaps, or take a wild guess or whatever, or socially engineer getting the username and password from somebody and then use those two in combination to get in. Mm. So, I really like it. Like down in the mitigation section, it's like Microsoft has not identified any mitigating factors for this vulnerability. Workarounds. Microsoft has not identified any workarounds for this vulnerability. Here's the workaround. Install the patch. So yeah, affected products include Windows Server 2012 R2, 2016, and Windows Server Core. 1709 and 1803 versions. Anyway, if you use ADFS and you're an IT guy, you might want to take a look at this one.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, there's a CVE. We'll post it in the show notes, obviously. You go read about it, but kind of hairy. Kind of reminds me of that Office 365 SAML vulnerability that they had a while back last year sometime. Heinous, I tell you.
I have another bit of news here. This is for those of you in the SharePoint Office 365. Well, not Office 365, in the SharePoint on-premises world. The availability of SharePoint Server 2019 is now out and preview. So the preview program is out. You can now get your hands on it, take a look at it. This is in a blog post from Bill Baer from Microsoft. A couple of highlights here about what's in SharePoint Server 2019. Really, let me just take a step back from this before I tell you these things. This is just a snapshot of what Office 365, what SharePoint Online was back in January.
Yeah.
That you can now install on-prem for the pieces that make sense to be on-prem and not in the cloud. So when we get these kind of like, hey, you know, the latest, the new install of SharePoint's out there, can I go grab it and let's see what's in it? It's a bit anticlimactic these days, which in one sense is kind of nice because it's just a snap of what we have in the battle-tested SharePoint Online. So the big things that you'll find here that are different for at least an on-prem story are now the modern experience is available on-prem now, whereas before it was only available in SharePoint Online. There are some changes to pages. There are some changes to lists. It looks like formatting a column is now, format columns and format rows, you can use some JSON to describe how you want to format your rows and columns. That is available to you now. I think it might just be columns. Actually, it might just be columns. I don't know if rows are in there as well. Some document library updates, communication sites are in there. SharePoint mobile site is there. Large file support, character restrictions, all that stuff has been addressed.
Let's not just skim over that one. I mean, if there's a big feature I'm excited about for SharePoint 2019, it's the fact that you can include hashtags and percent signs and folder names.
Oh, you're brutal. They also increased the URL path link restrictions from 260 to 400. Okay. Anyway, there is if you go to this link that from Bill Baer, I'm not an on-prem person, but I mean, they have a, if you go to the link that we have in the show notes here, there is a quick start guide. There's towards the end of it, there's a couple frequently asked questions. And then right before that, there are links to a quick start guide to help you install and deploy it, a reviewer's guide so you can share in the many investments that you'll find, and a present PowerPoint deck that you can use to share amongst your organization about the investments that you'll find in SharePoint Server 2019.
Cool. There are some nice improvements for on-prem. In all seriousness, like the new modern page stuff. If you're stuck on-prem and you have no ability to move to 365 for whatever reason, that is a kind of, I could see why that would be pretty appealing to some people, just for the new page stuff alone.
Well, and it is. And as far as from the development side or the extensibility side, the fact that modern pages come to on-prem, that allows people who are doing SharePoint framework development to use extensions. So you'll be able to do app customizers and command sets. And
is that going to this 2019 release though? My understanding was that there was a version of SPFX before that, or are they bumping to include those additional things?
So the way that it worked is that we got SharePoint framework version 1.0.1 is what we got when we got feature pack 2 for 2016.
Yep.
For SharePoint Server 2019, it's SharePoint Framework version 1.4.1, which is right now, today we're at 1.5.1, and within a couple of weeks, we're supposed to be at 1.6 at the end of August. But this is going to include a lot of stuff like extensions, web parts. There's some notable things that are not included in it. I think it's still trying to understand exactly what those are. But I don't know if site collection app catalogs are there. I don't know if tenant properties are there.
Gotcha. You know, one thing that pissed me off about this blog post was that there is no mention at all of the dev stuff.
Nope.
There's no section about building stuff for SharePoint Server 2019.
No, there's not. I'll tell you what, man. I think that the team that's responsible for this, for the SharePoint extensibility stuff, they've done a really good job. But I got to express some frustrations to the people above them. Maybe this is directed at, you know, very specific people, but it's really disappointing to see the lack of recognition on how much dev is still being done on SharePoint. I mean, just in a call this morning that I was on, a public call, so I'm not disclosing anything. The SharePoint framework is the number one most quickly adopted third-party library for extending SharePoint beyond the solution model, between apps, all that stuff. It has by far blown everything else away, and it is incredibly popular too when you compare it to something like the development opportunities you have with Microsoft Teams. And so it's surprising to me that you don't see more investments by the team or by more resources allocated to that dev team to really do a lot of stuff to catch up and get this platform at the same parity with what we have with solutions. So this is not a frustration I'm expressing to the dev team. I'm expressing it to the team, to people above them that says, guys, I mean, there's did you know all the documentation for SharePoint development is done by the PMP group?
I did.
Not by Microsoft. It's done by the community.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, in fairness, they are doing a better job than has ever been done by Microsoft before.
Well, they are, but I mean,
it's no excuse, right? But they're doing a great job of it.
They are. I mean, Vesa leads over the whole SharePoint Patterns and Practices group, and there's a bunch of people that are from Microsoft that are involved in it, like Patrick Rogers and Robin, a bunch of other guys, Bert, but there's a bunch of people from the community that are involved in it. I'm one of them, but it's surprising to me how much the community is actually driving the dev story. It's just disappointing, but I mean, they're doing a great job of what they're given. It's just like, oh, well.
Yeah.
I climb off my soapbox.
No, it's fair. It is fair. And it is a shame that, like, so Bill, shame on you, not talking about the dev story in your blog post, buddy. Come on now. You love developers. I know you do.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. So moving right along, I've got a bit more of an interesting sort of schnurfy, nerdy one. This one is a blog post from I know this is really going to, like, get your juices flowing, AC, but, like, this is from the Windows Command Line Tools for Developers blog.
Okay? What? Wow.
Yeah. Sorry, I know. It's really blowing your nighty up, isn't it?
It really is, man. Wow, look at these charts. Sorry, go ahead.
It is entitled The Windows Command Line, Introducing the Windows Sudo Console, CONPTY. So, I don't know. Okay. So if you're a Mac developer, like if you work on a Mac OS, OS X or Linux or any of those other things, you've got this great set of tools, you know, console tools, terminal, you've got lots of different terminal terminal emulator, all sorts of terminals you can choose from. And people have whined and moaned about, you know, command.exe and Windows in the past. And a lot of it has been held back by Windows, what's the right word to say this, like lack of a decent architecture around TTY, right? So terminals and connecting to them and how apps and your terminal emulator connect and all that sort of stuff. And for a long time, there's been a lot of moaning about the fact that Windows kind of sucks at this. Anyway, Rich Turner from Microsoft has made a post about what's coming in the new insiders build of Windows and what they're calling CONPTY, which is a pseudo terminal sort of infrastructure built into Windows. Anyway, he gives a background about what is TTY and where it's come from and why it's so important and what a pseudo terminal is now and stuff like now we don't have like mainframes off in other rooms and consoles and different rooms and stuff. And then what it means to Windows to get a real PTY infrastructure in Windows and how they've added that to the new builds. And so coming full circle, what this will enable is a whole bunch of really cool new scenarios for command line apps and terminal emulators in Windows, one of which is obviously like the Linux subsystem in Windows and how you work with that on a command line and all that sort of stuff, and other terminals like Commander and Hyper and all those sorts of terminal emulators that you can go and add, and also what it means for remoting for like PowerShell and all that sort of stuff. So if you want to nerd out about TTYs and PTYs and consoles, terminals and blah, 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 and yada, yada, go read this blog. It's really fascinating. At least I nerded out about it. It was nice. It's kind of cool to dig into.
It is interesting. I was scrolling through their blog, and I mean, I got to give it to them. They blogged more frequently than I have this year, which is...
Who knew you could write so much about terminals and stuff?
there's some stuff here that's kind of funny to me. I mean, there's a post from June here, and it shows the evolution of the Windows command line. It shows the Windows 7 console and the Windows 10 console like side by side. And I'm like, so what's the difference? One of them looks like a Vista kind of a Chrome at the top, and the other one looks like a square box at the top.
So yeah, what's that all about?
Yeah, there's some, but I understand that like that part of this pseudo console is supposed to get, SSH is going to be baked into it so that you don't need PuTTY anymore.
OpenSSH is already baked into Windows. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, anyway.
So yeah, it takes advantage of that to do remoting, like to connect to remote machines and all that sort of stuff, things like that. But it's going to be really helpful for devs, like because the things you take for granted on OS X, that Windows is sort of slowly catching up in that space. So, yeah. Anywho.
Cool.
If you snurf out about terminals, go read that blog post. I found that background really interesting. Okay, any other last requests before we take a quick break? Okay, let's hear from a sponsor.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Okay, AC, the future of app development with Azure Active Directory.
This is going to be fun.
You and I have spoken about this topic at different conferences and different conversations with different, you know, people at conferences and on the podcast a couple of times and things, but I know that you've been a bit of a critic about how things have gone with Azure Active Directory around application identity and the authentication models and the libraries available and all those sorts of things, how fast or lack of speed Microsoft are going on some of this stuff. So what we thought we'd do is just do a quick wrap-up of where we think we're currently at and then where we see things going, where the investments are being made from Microsoft around this space. And it'll matter to developers because, quite frankly, some of this stuff's pretty confusing, right? If you're a new developer, especially coming to this space and trying to figure out how do I make my app authenticate with Azure AD in a mobile app or a web app or a Windows app or a command line app, like it seems like a cobweb of pain and suffering and decisions and crazy documentation and all that to try and figure out what model should you use, what library should you use, should I use V1 or V2, all those sorts of things. And it just seems super, super hard. And then to boot, you know, we had V1, then introduced V2, and now there's a whole separate app registration portal where you go register your apps that, you know, I can never find that thing. I always have to go search the docs to find the link to the app registration portal because it's on some goofy URL that I can never remember.
I'm right there with you. It's a simple URL. It's like apps.reg.microsoft.com or apps. I'm going to get it wrong. But it's something really simple because there's just like 2 or 3 three-letter words that are all in subdomains. But
yeah,
I'm with you.
I can never get them around the right way, though. If I try to type it in, I can. So kind of a recap, I guess. Why don't we recap first on where we're currently at, and then we'll talk about where we think things are going.
Okay. So how do you want to do this? I think there's 3 pillars that you can look at.
Yep.
Right? So there's the API piece, so there's like what is supported, and there's a V1 and a V2. And V1 was, say, Azure AD supporting the OAuth V1 implementation, but it wasn't a real true implementation of V1. It was kind of like their implementation of it. So
yeah,
there's
a
lot of stuff there's some stuff that's not standards compliant or up to spec. V2 is conforming to OAuth V2, but it's also doing something else. It does something what is called converged auth. And so if you're familiar with not just app registration, but with user registration with Microsoft, we have 2 different types of identities. You've got Microsoft accounts or MSAs, which you may be familiar as being Xbox Live accounts or Live.com
accounts,
Hotmail, Outlook, all that stuff. Consumer identities. And that's the stuff that we've always had with Microsoft. That goes all the way back to the passport days and all that. And then the other side of authentication we have is Azure AD. And that's what is Office 365. That's what you use to log in to
commercial accounts
or what they call work and school.
Yep.
And so what they did is they did a converged auth where they said, instead of having to choose between the two, we're going to have, or choose between 2 different authentication models, we're going to let you just say, hey, we're going to use the same API. It's going to be treated kind of like a proxy, and it will handle all of the authentication stuff, depending if you're MSA or Azure AD authentication, making it a lot simpler.
Yep.
Okay. The second
thing that's more confusing is the Azure AD auth is originally a forked code from MSA.
You're really trying to confuse them, aren't you? Let's make just, auth hard.
Yeah, just a little bit of the history, right?
I'm trying to make auth easy again.
Yeah, that's
not, it was easy.
Not for a while, yeah.
So the second pillar that we had is around the different SDKs that you could use to log in. And one of them was the Azure Active Directory Authentication Library, otherwise known as ADAL, with a bunch of different implementations of that, a JavaScript, a .NET, a Java, iOS, all those implementations. And then there was the...
And that worked against V1, right?
Yeah, only worked against V1.
Yeah.
And then there was the Microsoft Authentication Library, which has never made it out of preview. It's been around for about 2 or 3 years now. And it only works against the V2 endpoint, right? So, and they're mutually exclusive. And yeah, you can't do everything in one that you can do in the other one. And certain scenarios are only supported in one and not in the other one. So like, for example, if you want to use the Microsoft Graph guys have always said, because our API endpoint can be used to talk to consumer resources like Outlook.com and OneDrive Consumer, or it can be used for commercial resources like Office 365 and OneDrive for Business, then we push people to the V2 endpoint, which pushes people to the MSAL libraries to do all of your registration.
Yeah.
That brings us to our third pillar, which is how do I create an app? So that third pillar is when you create an app, there's the whole code piece to it, set that aside, but you still have to register your application with Microsoft in some way and tell it like, you know, here's the ID of my application, here's the name, here's the logo, here's who's responsible for it, what the permissions are, or what we also refer to as scopes on what they can do. And yet again, we have two different ways of doing this. We have the Azure portal way of doing it. So if you go to portal.azure.com, that has always been able to only to create apps that conform to the V1 style authentication, so those that can use ADAL. And then we have another thing called the Azure App Registration Portal, which is what you and I were just fumbling with the URL with a bit a minute ago, also referred to as ARP, A-R-P, is that's the one that only works with the V2 style endpoint, right? So that's the state of where we are, and we've all been kind of wondering, like, when are we going to have this convergence of, now that you've converged the authentication, you know, there are two different ways we can authenticate. Now, when can we convert? We can converge on all this other stuff. So I don't have so many different choices that I have to make here and just say, here we go. Now, the nice thing about these choices is that really, if you're confused by this, if you take a step back, if you answer a couple questions when you go to build your application, it's actually pretty easy because you're going to get self-selected into which one you're going to want to do. If you say, I want to be able to support consumer, then you have to use the app registration portal because you have to use the V2 endpoint, which means you can only use MSAL. But if you want to be able to do certain other things that are not supported by MSAL, then you have to use the V1, which is ADAL, which is the app registration portal. Is the app portal.
Then there's other features, right? Like dynamic consent, which is only available through the V2 model. Mm-hmm. Dynamic consent is the ability to say up front when somebody initially consents for your application, you might have one set of scopes that you're asking for, like read user information and read and write files or something. And then later on, you might want to upgrade your consent to have more scopes. And so you can dynamically go and ask the user for more on the fly. And that's only available in the V2 model.
Yep. So V2, App Registration Portal, MSAL.
Yes. Yes,
it's a very popular one too. So you don't have to ask for, like if you've ever used the, like for anybody who's ever used the Graph Explorer, when you go to authenticate against that, it demands a ton of permissions up front. Yep. Think of that as static consent. Whereas before, maybe I wanted to create an application that was a free version of it and it allowed you to kind of, I don't know, let's say it could read your inbox for your mailbox. But down the road, if you paid for some service on it, paid for a feature, it says, oh, now we can actually send email on your behalf, but we need the right permission. I didn't have to ask for that up front or create two separate apps. Now I can have one app just kind of get that permission as it's needed.
Yeah. So only for user consented apps. Like if you're just doing app only or client credential flow, in other words, dynamic consent doesn't work for those types of apps. It's only for delegated authentication for users.
Yep. Okay. So that's kind of, now you know where we are today. That's August 16th, 2018. Now, what the Azure team has said, it's looking forward, what they have publicly said, I got to be a little careful on how I say this, because some of this stuff is NDA, not the stuff I'm going to talk about, because that, no, I'd be breaking that NDA. Yep. Some of the stuff is NDA, but they've also talked about what their intentions are in a couple of public forums. Like there was one of the monthly Microsoft Graph community calls, one of the Azure AD guys got on and told everybody about what they were doing. So here's what they've said, is that they are bringing all of this stuff together. Exactly what they're doing, like instead of having these two different things, they are bringing things together. So instead of two app registration portals, there'll be one. Instead of two authentication libraries, there'll be one. Instead of a V1 and a V2 endpoint, maybe those will still be there, but the SDKs will handle like those kind of details for us. So they plan on doing that, and they've said that, hey, that's coming in the next 6 to 12 months. So I don't know, I can't say anything about timing, but the one thing that they did talk about recently that you and I wanted to touch on the show today was the app registration process. And what there was talked about on the Microsoft Graph community call was that, so let me take a step back here. There's a program called Azure Insiders, which if you are like a Microsoft MVP, or if you are a partner or a customer, you can get into the Azure Insiders program, which is effectively just a collection of a bunch of different Yammer groups, or groups inside of Yammer. And what was mentioned inside of one of these public calls recently was that there is the preview of a new app registration portal, or a revamped one, I should say, is available for people to try out. You could go into the, if you were part of the Azure Insiders, you could apply to be, have access to the preview, and then you could get into it, and then you could give them your feedback. Potentially they would accept you in, and then you could give them their feedback. And so there's been a lot of debate about, you know, which is the right direction to go. You know, should we get rid of app registrations inside of the Azure portal and just use that app registration site? Or should we do it the other way? Should we get rid of an app registration site and keep it all inside of Azure? What should we do here? And I don't want to talk about the preview experience that I had, because I don't know if that's NDA or not. I think that you and I would, I thought what we would do is let's talk a little about what our philosophy is on this. And like what I want to see, you tell me what you want to see, where you think on this. So what I'm hoping to see is for all of these external things, like the app registration portal, to go away. I want that ARP site to just die.
Yep.
I think that one of the things that I think that we see from a lot of people at Microsoft is they keep trying to make authentication, app authentication, all that stuff. They try and make this stuff easier and easier and easier. And I think that by doing that, like with that app registration portal, it sure is easy to create an app, but then to manage that app is incredibly hard.
Yeah.
If you want to do anything else with that app, anything special with that, it can be very hard to go through and to manage those things. Like to get to the manifest, to be able to turn on, like say, implicit or something like that. They do try and expose that through the portal, but it's just in a very like simplistic, to me, like junior dev kind of way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not trying to sound like an elitist developer here, but to me, app authentication and user authentication, it's a fundamental thing that you do need to understand how it works and how you can interact with it inside of your application, and to try and simplify things down to a level to make anybody be able to do a wizard and do click, 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 hey, you have an app and now you're authenticating. To me, just is you're over-trivializing the work that you're going to end up having to do. And if you're trying to bring in people who don't understand it as much into that point, then you've kind of let them in the front door, and now they're in the front door and they realize that they're staring at a bunch of guns pointed at them. They're like, what the hell am I supposed to do now?
I was going to say, it's a noble pursuit to try and make app authentication simple and easy for developers so that people can get past that hurdle faster. Where I think it gets let down though is like, sure, you can register an app real quick, but like you're not sure what picking particular options in that wizard is going to ultimately do and mean. And then as soon as you've got your app ID, then you're sort of hosed, because then you're back in the thick of like, cool, now how do I integrate this with my app? And have the choices I've just made precluded me from this thing working?
Yeah. Right?
Like the whole choice about, you know, a native app versus a web app and all that, like, those things matter in terms of the type of app that it's creating. But a dev is probably not aware of exactly the implications that a new dev is not aware of the implications of picking one or the other. And it matters. So, but yeah, I think to your point about the portal, here's a scenario. We've got four production app IDs. Two are in the Azure AD portal, in the Azure portal.
Portal.azure.com.
Yeah. And two are in the other portal. ARP. There you go. Yeah. Two are in the ARP, right? And for the life of me, I can never remember which ones are in where. And so typically, I go into Azure first and I look in the portal and I'm like, oh, dang nabbit. It's not there where I thought it was. And so then I've got to go to the Microsoft docs and go fidget my way through a bunch of documentation to try and find the URL to the app registration portal to the ARP to go find the other one. And it's just a pain in the butt. I just wish I could see one portal, all my app registrations in one place, consistent UI, and go manage them all in one spot.
I agree with you. And the thing that I don't like about it is that the ARP portal, the one that the, you know, that like the graph team sends you to use. No, yep. I shouldn't say it like that because it sounds like it's their fault. The ones that the V2 endpoint, you have to use if you're doing the V2 endpoint, which makes sense if you're going to be using graph to use the V2 endpoint. The thing that I don't like about that one is that I just feel, I know that there's so many more settings and stuff that I can configure and that I can use. And I just feel like you're oversimplifying stuff that is making it easy for me to not have to, is making it easy for some developers to really get started on building an app. To me, I'd like to see that go away. I'd like to have everything inside of the Azure portal. I get that a lot of people don't like the Blade interface and stuff or the way that they set that stuff up. That's fine. That's a different discussion because that's not an app Azure AD thing. That's an Azure portal thing that is pervasive across the entire portal. But what irritates me or what I don't like is that when you talk about this with some of the Microsoft people and they say that, yeah, it's too hard and all this stuff is really intimidating to developers. To me, if I turn around and I take what I do inside of the Azure portal to go create a new app, and I compare that to the experience of going over to Google or to Facebook or to, well, let's just use Google and Facebook. Yeah, or even to the Google Cloud platform. And I create an app in one of those to be able to call. It's the same stuff. There may be some nuances to those platforms that I need to understand. But to sit there and say that, oh, you know, we want to make it really easy for you to go through and create an app, that's fine. You go make, then create a wizard, you know, inside of the same experience here. But don't stop other developers that understand or need these other features and need the capabilities to be able to modify certain things. Don't block them from having to get to those different features. So to me,
definitely,
I like the idea that they've talked about, or at least it seems that they've alluded to publicly, is that they're getting rid of the Azure, the app registration portal, and they're going to switch to ARP, and they're going to try to, and they're going to do more. They're going to revamp the portal inside of Azure, portal.azure.com, that's going to get revamped to support the V2 endpoints and have everything kind of converged into one spot.
One thing that I don't know if, I really have no idea if they're doing this because I haven't looked at it closely enough. I would love to see them get away from exposing all the stuff through Azure AD in the Azure portal and just have like app registrations. Like why sort of mentally tie app registrations to Azure AD? Why do you have to go into Azure AD, into the Blade, then go find, what is it, Enterprise Apps or something or others? I can never remember. There's like two that look real similar.
Yeah.
And you click into one and you're like, no, that's not it. And then you go into the other one and you find app registrations. Why not just have like app registrations for Azure? And it might, behind the scenes, that's the infrastructure, right? It might end up in Azure AD. But like, why do you have to go into Azure AD when there's all sorts of other guff in there? If they wanted to simplify it, they could simplify it that way. Versus like the power of actual app registration and the configuration options and the terminology should all be standard with everybody else, right? So that we're all on the same page. But sort of de-Microsofting it a little bit in terms of the AD aspect of it, I think would help a little.
I can see that point. I can see your point with that. I mean, to me, it's, I don't feel as strongly about that as you do, but I can see your point. I mean, it makes sense to me that, you know, Azure AD is a place where all authentication is going to happen. And so, it's two things. It's identities, and it's where all authentication happens. And to me, it's, you've got two different kinds of identities. You've got people.
I sort of see it as where
you get users and apps.
Yeah, I mean, I totally see like groups and users. Yeah, it's an AD thing. Absolutely. Who's got permission to what? Absolutely. Like security stuff. AD. Just feeling from a dev point of view, if they want to make it simpler for devs, try to like mentally decouple it from being a thing that lives in AD. Anyway, I don't know.
That's fair.
It's just a philosophical thing, I guess, but could help. The other thing I'd like to see them do is make it easier for... The other thing that I think that would help with, at least mentally help with, is like moving app registrations.
Oh, so like, yes.
One of the common mistakes you see developers make is a dev will start building an app, and in their dev subscription, they'll go create the app ID and all that, right? And then next thing you know, it's being used in production, right? Let's be honest. I mean, that happens a lot, right?
Yeah.
Typically, well, what you're supposed to do is go create a production app ID in secret in your production Azure AD tenant somewhere else that you don't have access to, that the developer doesn't have access to, and all of that. But how many times has this happened where your app registration gets created in the dev tenant and then the app starts being pushed out and used in production and that app registration is still in the dev tenant? And then eventually the dev tenant goes away and all hell breaks loose, right? Or the secret expires or what have you. And there's some nice features that I'd like to see them add around this that would really help with sort of the operations side of using Azure AD applications. That's things like being able to move an app registration between subscriptions and Azure ADs. I think that would really help because sometimes you need to move stuff. Take, for example, us. We have multiple different Azure subscriptions, and now we've been acquired by this other company. Now I want to move all of our stuff into their Azure subscriptions, right? Mm-hmm. Can't move your app IDs. So stuff like that would facilitate those sorts of things. Other developer-friendly and ops-friendly features, like sending you a bloody email before your app secret expires. Am I asking for too much?
Yeah, that would be nice. That's obvious.
Now you may wonder why I'm asking that after having just come back from a 3-week vacation in New Zealand.
Uh-oh.
Where one of our app secrets expired. It's the classic like how many people's SSL certificates still expire?
Yeah.
Tons, right? It's the same problem, but for app IDs and secrets. Your secrets expire. And unless you're keeping track of it, which you should be, let's be honest, there is nothing. You can't sign up for an alert or an email or anything like that to come to you to go, hey, by the way, your app ID is about to expire.
Yeah.
Simple op stuff like that would be really helpful.
Yeah, good point. They're definitely very good points. It'll be interesting to see where they go with this. I hope it would be nice to hear some stuff at Ignite about some updates on where they make it. I don't know if this is an Ignite thing. I don't know if this is a build thing because it is kind of devy, but it is pretty infrastructure-y. So it is IT pro-y. I don't know. I mean, I would hope that they have some sort of an update coming from it. But
it's
they've been
a while. Been a long while, so
it's
so
been
hopefully
a long
soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Anyway.
Yeah, so I guess if you're building an app today and you're in the office-y, SharePoint-y kind of world, there's a couple of things I think you should know. Life has gotten a lot better on the V2 model if you're in the SharePoint and Office 365 world, right? So now with V2, you call the graph, you call SharePoint APIs. You can take a Microsoft Graph refresh token and use that to go get an access token to call SharePoint APIs directly now in the V2 model, which is...
That's really cool.
Really nice. So if you can't do something through the graph and you need to call a SharePoint API directly, you can use your refresh token to go... So long as you've got the right scopes, obviously, you can use your graph refresh token to go and ask for a SharePoint access token and go call SharePoint APIs. And you can do that with the Azure AD graph APIs with the older Azure AD APIs, SharePoint APIs, OneDrive APIs, all that sort of stuff. I think there's pretty good coverage there now. So are there any scenarios now where you would say, hey, you should go do a V1 app? If somebody was in that bucket, in the sort of the SharePoint Office 365 category, because I used to say, go do V1 if you need to go call SharePoint APIs and all that sort of stuff. But now V2's up to speed on that side of things?
I don't think so. I don't know. I'm sure there is. I'm just not thinking off the top of my head.
There's probably some edge cases, yeah.
Yeah, there's some stuff that I know that there is something. I just can't remember it off the top of my head. But I can't remember the last time that I've created a V1 app. It's always been a V2.
Yep. I'm doing a session next week at SP Fest, part of which I did at SharePoint Conference North America, where I do a whole bunch of demos, and it's all on the V2 model. For all the examples I give, mostly with graph, but also with SharePoint APIs and things. So, yeah, be interesting to see where they take it. Like, yeah, things are heading in the right direction. It's just at a snail pace.
if our listeners, I'm curious to hear what you guys think. You know, what do you prefer? What do you prefer, having like a separate app registration portal, or would you rather see everything inside of the Azure portal itself and portal.azure.com? Let us know. Sound off. Send us a comment.
Let's do a poll.
There you go.
We can do a Twitter poll. We'll put a poll out on Twitter and see what people think.
There we go. Cool.
Nice. So yeah, that's some commentary around the state of the nation with Azure AD authentication and development for developers.
To be continued.
To be continued. This is a very hot topic for us, like at least for me, because we do a lot of this, and I know you've expressed concerns and comments and all that sort of stuff. So you obviously care about it too. Yeah. But it's so important because it's the first thing everybody encounters, right?
Yeah.
It's like walking up to a house, you've got to get through the front door, and auth is always the front door.
Yep.
It's always a pain in the butt.
If you want to do anything with Office 365, programmatically, you have to use an Azure AD app. You have to.
Yep.
If you're going to do anything with Azure programmatically, you have to have an app.
Yeah.
And with so many more things now too, I mean, it would be nice to try and find somebody from the Azure team or the identity team when we're at Ignite and get them on the show and talk to them about, you know, what are they doing? What are their plans? Not to ambush them, but to instead just, what are you doing? Where are you going with this? What kind of a timeline can we all expect? So.
Yeah. You know who we should get back on the show?
Oh, you're thinking?
Captain Identity. We should get Vittorio back on the show.
I'm about to say, let's get Vittorio back.
Because now he's de-chipped from the mothership. The wound is healing, at least. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
He may be a little bit more liberal with his point of view on where things are at.
And animated.
I'd love to get his take on it. Yeah, more animated. Is that possible?
I don't know, but I'd love to see it.
He's a legend. Yeah, so Captain Identity, if you're listening, we're going to get you back on the show, buddy, and see what you have to say about the state of the Auth Nation.
Absolutely. Cool.
Cool, I say. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you next week in person at SP Fest. Again, if anybody's going to be there, please come find us. We're doing the live shows. We can send an email out about that shortly. Come find us, grab a t-shirt. Have a laugh, give AC feedback about how I'm the funny one, all that sort of stuff. And we'll see how we go. Yeah, one more thing. We'll be right back. CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
How can we do a show without pics, AC? I almost skipped them there for a second.
Ah, you were scaring me. I was like, wait a minute.
You're missing something. Yeah.
Oh, we got to do pics.
Classic. You want to lead us off?
Sure. I have a pair of pics and they're spacey. Shocker, I know. Did you know that China is launching two robots that are going to land on the far side of the moon? They're going to do it in December.
I heard about this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah,
I'm glad they're doing this. Like, it's kind of exciting.
They're going
back to the moon.
Oh, it totally is. They're going to put a rover to drive around on the moon and to pick up rocks and to look at the chemistry of some of rocks and just some stuff that we've never seen the dark side of the moon, or we haven't explored the dark side of the moon like this. So it'd be pretty cool. And they are also, as a kind of a reach goal, they're going to try to grow plants and worms on the moon. Oh yeah, there's one more thing they're going to do too. This is pretty cool. One of the other goals of the mission is they're going to try to see whether that region on the dark side of the moon is quiet enough from human activity. So like, you know, radios and that kind of stuff. To build a sensitive deep space radio telescope. So essentially use the moon as a shield from Earth to look out into the rest of space.
Dang, that sounds pretty cool. Really cool. There was going to be an Apollo mission that they were planning that didn't end up happening. I don't remember if it was like 19 or 20 or what Apollo mission it was slated for, but yeah, they were going to try and drop an Apollo mission, or astronauts on the dark side of the moon. It never happened. I don't know which mission it was for again, but yeah, it was just plans, but that would have been pretty sweet.
Just so people don't think I'm a complete idiot about this stuff, when I say the dark side of the moon, I don't mean like there is only a dark side that we've never explored. The moon rotates once a month. So there's a dark side of the moon, but it's not like there's a side of the moon we haven't really seen yet.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Not being that. But could you have something that stays over on the dark side of the moon that's always blocked because it's such a good blocker of light and radio transmissions from Earth?
Ah, right.
So that's all I meant.
Yeah, and gotcha.
My other pick, something I shared with you the other day, is a book that I'm listening to that if you want to go, you thought that looking at a console was geeky and reading a blog post about the Windows console was geeky.
Oh, yeah.
I see you and I raise you. I'm all in on this one. I'm listening to a book right now called Calculating the Cosmos. And it's I find it to be really interesting. It talks about the origin of the universe, of different planets, the moon, the different theories on how the moon came to be, how Saturn came to be, how Jupiter came to be. And it's by a guy from MIT, but it uses math, or it uses some pretty detailed math to kind of explain how they've proven some things and how they've disproven some things. It's not deep enough to where, if you're not a complete math nerd, where you're going to be lost, because they just talk enough about it to where they figure out the numbers and how, hey, look, you know, here's a correlation between these things and why the planets are spaced out where they are. How they use math. Here's something I listened to last night. This is interesting. Did you know, and this is a question to you, CJ.
Okay.
I didn't know this. So did you know that if Jupiter was just a fraction smaller than it is, then life on Earth would not exist?
No.
Because Jupiter's size is big enough, or it is, its size is big enough to attract and to attract comets and other asteroids that are coming into the solar system. It sucks them into its gravitational pull,
yeah,
because it's so big, and keeps them from hitting Earth.
Huh.
So if Jupiter was a little bit smaller, those wouldn't happen, and we'd be pelted much more frequently than we are by much bigger asteroids. And if it was a little bit bigger, it would be ripping, it would be pulling stuff closer to us.
That's pretty sweet.
That is interesting. It's that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of stuff to it. I mean, just listening to it in the background. I have it on when I'm driving or something. It's interesting.
Huh. That's really cool. You sent me the link to the audiobook, so I'm going to go listen to that. I have one which I thought was kind of interesting. It's sort of developer related. It's a Medium post by a dev who lives in London, by the looks of it. It's in microservices with Azure Functions, PDF download, .NET Core. So allowing you to generate PDF from your website whilst keeping it responsive. So he talks about using, like, rather than trying to fork threads in your web application to go do data intensive tasks that you really want to do in the background, he talks about how to do it with generating a PDF or a report from your website and calling out to a little microservice running in Azure Functions, which I thought was kind of a nifty use.
That is pretty cool.
And he walks through setting up the whole thing and how to go create the report and then firing off different events and doing it in the Azure function and all that sort of stuff. So, if you're forking threads in your .NET web application, which is kind of strongly ill-advised, is my understanding, then you could do something like this and offload the task out to Azure Functions.
Yeah, very cool.
Pretty nice. I just thought it was a nifty little pick.
Oh, I like it. No, I definitely like it.
Cool, AC. Looking forward to catching up next week in person, doing the live shows with you. And any listeners, stop on by the live shows or in person at the show.
Absolutely, yeah. We will be there and we will have shirts.
Yay, lots of shirts.
Yeah. We will have lots of shirts. We don't want to go. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We definitely don't want to do that. Yeah. All right. See you there, dude.
All right. Take care.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as an MP3 or WAV file and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up for our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.